An NBA All-Star point guard could be on the move this offseason, Super Bowl breakdown, and more. You're listening to The Hive with Devin Beasley, where you get the buzz on all sports all across the nation. Good afternoon, everybody. Hope you all had a wonderful Valentine's Day. Remember to show your loved ones how much they mean to you, not just on Valentine's Day, but each and every day. Now let's get into it and let's talk some sports. The NFL season has officially concluded. Last week was the Super Bowl. The culmination of all the hard work the Niners and Chiefs put in this past season, put on display for millions. And the Chiefs came out on top as repeat Super Bowl champions. Back to back. Not an easy feat for them. In terms of our predictions, didn't get the winning team right. Score prediction was kind of close. With us not getting the winning team right, I can't say I'm blown away by that fact. The Chiefs do have a man by the name of Patrick Mahomes. Quite possibly the greatest quarterback in our generation after Tom Brady. But our score prediction was, like I said, sort of close. Our prediction was 24-17 in favor of the San Francisco 49ers. The actual score was 22-25, Chiefs in overtime. So I guess our winner's score total was pretty close, off by 1 point. That's about as close as I've gotten all year. Now, this wasn't an amazing Super Bowl like we've seen in the past. It was honestly pretty sloppy on both sides, to be honest. But it was still a good one. Really, really defensive-minded. Mistakes by both teams. But it was a good Super Bowl. The Niners went up early in the first half. And, you know, to be honest, they had me thinking for just a minute, just a fraction of a second, they might have this game put away. But I knew better. I slowed myself down. I said, wait a minute. They still have Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes still has a whole half of football to go. And I know better than to count him out of any game in the season, in the playoffs, in the Super Bowl. He didn't disappoint. He clawed his way back into the game. The Chiefs defense stepped it up in the second half, and they sent it into overtime. Now look, I loved the aggressive move by the 49ers to start with the ball in overtime. It was risky. They were going to rely on their defense, which they've arguably been known for more this season. I liked it. What I didn't like was what they said after the game. I didn't like the fact that Kyle Shanahan reportedly did not go over overtime rules with his defense. Granted, this late in the season, Kyle Shanahan should not have to tell you the overtime rules. You should already know them. You know, as a whole, the entire team should know them by memory before the end of the preseason. But on the other side, Shanahan, review the game plan top to bottom every week, including overtime. Be prepared for this situation. With not knowing the rules of overtime, you're not 100% prepared for this situation. You're not prepared for any situation because you've got one missing. And the Kansas City Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes specifically. On my list here, he's just creeping up the list. He's getting closer and closer to that greatest all-time argument. I mean, he's got 3 Super Bowls before he's 30. And again, as I've said before, this is by far the worst receiving core he's had in his entire career. He really didn't have a number one receiver all year this year. Rookie Rashid Rice is good, but he's not quite a number one target. Now he's young, and he's a bit raw, so could he develop into a number one wide receiver? Absolutely. But the point is, Patrick Mahomes took a wide receiver core that was being led by a rookie in receiving yards and receiving touchdowns to a Super Bowl, and then dragged them to the finish by the collar. Kansas City, as a team, they've gotten younger. I fully expect to see another Super Bowl out of them, if not multiple. Patrick Mahomes is going to be there for a while. Chris Jones is probably going to return to the Chiefs, and that just helps keep their defense a little bit more stable as time goes on. Patrick Mahomes is going to meet with the front office in the offseason here. He's going to discuss restructuring his contract in the offseason. That's to free up some money to keep these other guys around, like Chris Jones. I think he'll take a minor pay cut. No, Chris Jones will. He'll take a minor pay cut, but he does want to get paid. ESPN has their way too early power rankings out. Kansas City has the number two slot there. I don't expect the rankings to move much at all unless Chris Jones signs elsewhere for some reason. Until free agency is done, I don't expect any kind of power rankings to really move. It's also extremely early, so we really don't know what exactly we're looking at for next season. But Kansas City is one of the heavy favorites to win the Super Bowl next year already, and it's going to stay that way for a good little while. I got asked a question earlier this week on our Podbean app in the comments section. While it's not our two-minute drill, I had to include this. It was too good of a question not to include this. It's from Robbie at P again. He's been showing up week in, week out with some great comments, great questions. He wrote this. He said, last football question until something crazy happens. What's your opinion on the title, Mr. Irrelevant? It feels disrespectful to those young players who have worked so hard to be where they are, most of them since they were kids, and then to be referred to as irrelevant. I think that term should be abolished after Brock's performance in the Super Bowl. Well, Robbie, it's always good to hear from you. Had to make an exception to the 1 2-minute drill rule. I'm going to throw your comment in here. Here's what I think. I think the term Mr. Irrelevant sounds like the NFL is putting down the player that gets picked last sometimes. It can almost be considered like the NFL is looking at them at like a joke. Kind of like a, hey, congrats, you made it, but you don't matter. You're probably not going to make it through training camp. Something along those lines, like that type of deal. But in the more rare cases that a Mr. Irrelevant works out, that title is only going to do good for their career. It's only going to do wonders. In the case of Brock Purdy, being in the Super Bowl, having that experience, going on deep runs in the playoffs, we're probably going to go another 10 years, and every draft, we'll be asking the same question by the time the last pick comes around. Are we going to get the next Brock Purdy from the Mr. Irrelevant position? I think Brock Purdy has absolutely helped the relevance of the later rounds in the draft. A lot of times you go into sports and, you know, basketball, you got two rounds. You get the first round, and once you get into the second round, if any, outside of the lottery, and people are kind of like, well, this guy might not make it long. In the NFL, you go outside of the first couple of rounds, and they're going, well, this guy will be a good training camp, a good practice squad. He might make it in the league. I think Brock Purdy has got college kids going, the term Mr. Irrelevant really doesn't matter. If I can get drafted, I can make it in the NFL. In the grand scheme of things, especially with Purdy making the Super Bowl, the name Mr. Irrelevant is going to have less and less meaning to it as the years go on. And who knows? Maybe it'll get renamed, or maybe it'll get dropped entirely. Maybe it'll be something that people just don't really consider anymore, because now we've had a Mr. Irrelevant that's made a Super Bowl as a quarterback. Now it's time for our actual two-minute drill, where we listen to you. These comments are taken from our comment section from last week's podcast episode on the Podbean app, or on our Facebook or Instagram pages DMs. You can always message us on there as well if you don't have the app and you're watching from our website or listening from our website. Today's comment comes from the Podbean app. It comes from Andrew Ewing. This is somebody we haven't had on the two-minute drill before. He's brand new. Andrew wrote, Daytona 500 is next week, with qualifying and races starting this week. Which race slash series are you most looking forward to, and who are you picking to win in each series? Andrew, thanks for the comment. Welcome. Hope you've been enjoying the show. And your 2 minutes starts now. The Daytona 500, guys. It's the biggest race of the year, one of the most popular in all of motorsports in general. It's one of my favorite events of the year. I know 99.999% of motorsports fans, especially on the NASCAR front, loves it as well. But no matter how much fun the rest of the weekend is, there is nothing better than the Cup Series race. The build-up and anticipation of the weekend after watching the Truck and Xfinity races, and then on Sunday, watching our favorite drivers fly around the 2.5-mile track at almost 200 miles an hour, and then waiting with our breath held constantly, anticipating the unavoidable big one, all while crossing our fingers that our driver stays in it. It's like no other feeling. You can't beat it. But here we're going to get into some official predictions. I did do my top five for the Cup Series race, but I'm going to do one driver for each race this time. It's going to be difficult, but we're going to get into this. For the Truck Series race, Ty Majeski. Just look at the last couple of years. Ty finished last year sixth at Daytona and seventh in 2022. Without picking one of the part-time drivers in the Truck Series race or the Xfinity Series race, like Corey LaJoie or Daniel Suarez, guys who are filling in part-time spots, going to try to keep it to one driver that's not a part-time driver. I like Ty Majeski here. I think he's due for a Daytona win. I think this is his year, and I think he's going to start the year off right. For our Xfinity Series, AJ Allmendinger. AJ is making a full-time return to the Xfinity Series this year, and he's going to start it out with a bang. He's finished second and third in 2022, as well as winning once at Talladega. That's the last time he drove full-time for the Xfinity Series. Honestly, I have a hard time picking anyone else here but AJ. He's a great super speedway driver, as well as a road course driver, so he'll get a win there this year too. I expect him to be out front a lot this weekend. And then for the Cup Series. Honestly, Cup Series race is always the hardest to pick just one driver. But Chris Buescher is going to be my one. As much as I want to throw all of Roush Fenway Keselowski Racing out there, I'm going to stick with just him. He had a 3-win season last year, one of which being at Daytona. So he's already won here. He's experienced. He's made a good run into the playoffs. He's got some great super speedway drivers as teammates in Brad Keselowski and David Ragan, both super speedway winners. They as a team are going to have a lot of success this weekend. Look for Buescher to come out on top, but also look for the rest of RFK to make a surge to finish in the top 10. That right there concludes our two-minute drill. Again, thank you to Andrew Ewing for the comment. And remember, if you want to be featured on our two-minute drill segment, leave a comment under this week's episode, and you're in the running. Keep the comments flowing. If you aren't picked 1 week, don't worry. We'll do a two-minute drill every week. You still have a chance of being featured. I actually have a question for you guys. The NASCAR season starts this week, and I wanted to do something special for the season on our social media. What if we do a paint scheme of the week? I'll look at all the paint schemes throughout the races. Each week, pick my favorite scheme for that individual race. There's not going to be any repeats. I'd love to have some more interaction with our fans. So I'd encourage you to comment with your favorite paint scheme if you don't agree with my pick. Then at the end of the year, we'll go ahead and pick the top five best paint schemes. Maybe take a vote on them for the best paint scheme of the year. Let's start with the Daytona 500, so we'll do it. This is duels week, so we won't do it now, but we'll do it next week with the 500. Let's have some fun, and let's look at some great paint schemes. Looking forward to it this year. The NBA trade deadline is over. And guess what that means? That means it's time for the speculation part of the season. The part of the year where we try to call what happens in the off season. And you know what? One guy that I was surprised didn't get talked about more during the trade deadline, that's Trae Young. The Atlanta Hawks seem to be open and ready to part ways with Young. He's in the second year of his $215 million extension, and the Hawks look ready to hit the reset button now. DeJounte Murray got more attention than Trae Young during the actual trade deadline, and a large part of that is because the Hawks won't settle for less with Young, especially since they paid $215 million for him. And one of the potential suitors for a Trae Young destination, I like this one a lot. I've got two of them, but it's San Antonio Spurs are my favorite. But let's think here. When I think of a franchise player, I think of a player that a team can't win without them on the floor. LeBron has been that for multiple teams. Ja Morant turns the Grizzlies around when he's not hurt or suspended. I think the Nuggets would be on the opposite end of the Western Conference if Jokic was out. Jimmy Butler is also one of those guys with the Miami Heat. All of these guys make a team 10 times better when they're not on the floor. I just don't get that feeling from Trae Young. And it hasn't shown either. I mean, look at the Hawks' record the past few years. This year, they're 24-31. Last year, they're 41-41. And the year before, they're 43-39. So, very middle of the road Eastern Conference team here. Nothing that's going to blow you away, but decent. While we have a very small sample size of what it's like for the Hawks to play without Trae Young, they play the same way with or without Young on the floor. He's missed less than two games per each of the last 2 years. The Hawks are about 500 when he's not present. I think this past year he missed five. They went 2-3. And then the year before that, they went 3-3, and he missed six games. On top of that, every year, guess what we're saying? The Hawks are missing one, maybe two pieces. They thought they had it with John Collins. He's not in Atlanta anymore. They thought they had it with DeJounte Murray. He's been in trade talks the last 2 years. It's time to clean slate the Atlanta Hawks. You tried to make Trae Young the focal point there. It hasn't worked. And Atlanta hasn't exactly been known as the marquee location for free agents. They're more of a baseball town. You're not going to go out and sign any huge free agents to get them to come to the Hawks. So you need to stockpile some draft picks here just over the next couple of years. And look, I'm not saying that Trae Young is a bad basketball player. The guy's an all-star. He's great. What I'm saying is Trae Young isn't a great number one option. He would be an amazing number two option. Every year, the Hawks have Trae Young, a great number two option, and then DeJounte Murray, who's a great number two option. They had John Collins, who's a great number two option. Good number two option. Great number three option. And then players that everybody hopes will work out, or they have players that are low risk, just about to hit their ceiling, if not hit their ceiling already. They always have number two guys, but they haven't really had a number one option since Trae Young has been their point guard. So all in all, I already mentioned the Spurs. I've got two trade destinations for Trae Young. These are both places he can go and be the needle moving piece for that team, or be there to help the team develop into a championship-winning team. The first being the Miami Heat. Miami is trying to right the ship to get them back into the finals before Jimmy Butler calls it quits. Trae Young fits the bill perfectly for what the Miami Heat need. A scoring point guard who's also a good facilitator. That's Trae Young. Next to Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo, that's a big-time NBA big three. And honestly, the Heat have enough young guys and draft picks. They could pull this off without moving Tyler Hero, which they've been very hesitant to do the last couple of years. Everybody's asked about him. Every time, nothing's good enough to either get him or the Heat just eliminate him from trade talks entirely. Go into the offseason. You can move Terry Rozier. Give up Hakez and Nikola Jovic. Or throw some draft picks in there. And I think this is kind of a done deal here. You're trading a fringe all-star in Terry Rozier and a bunch of young pieces. And now you've become the contender that we all know you can become in Miami. Jimmy Butler's going to be happy. He's going to be able to have a winning team. He's going to be back in the finals. He's going to be able to go out on top. The slightly slower route is to trade Trae Young to the San Antonio Spurs. Now, if this trade does get done, it means the Spurs believe that they are a lot closer to contending than we all think they are. Right now, we're all kind of operating under the assumption that Wembanyama is kind of the first draft pick of many that's going to be building towards a championship roster. They add Trae Young. That means they think they're already there. I don't think it would take much after acquiring Trae Young as the number two option next to Wembanyama to be that contender you want to be. You can package Keldon Johnson with Trae Jones and some draft picks, and you would also have a done deal. Trae Young and Wemby connection would be incredible. You'll have Trae Young, who's been a great passer, great facilitator, throwing lobs to Victor Wembanyama. Wemby's already their bona fide number one option. When you have Trae Young next to him, it would allow the floor to open up so much more than it already is. The Spurs are already dangerous as it is with their current spacing. Add Trae Young next to that, and in a year or two, we may be looking at one of the best two-way teams in the league. If you can pull this trade off, try to hold on to Devin Vassell and Jeremy Sochan for the added defense next to Wemby. They'll be looking great. San Antonio would also be able to hide Trae Young and his lack of defensive ability when they're on that side of the floor if they can hang on to Vassell. They'll be able to hide him as well, really well with their size. I also think it would be hilarious to see Trae Young, one of the shortest guys in the league, next to Victor Wembanyama, who's debatably the tallest guy in the league, next to Taco Fall. Greg Popovich is approaching the end of his coaching career. I think a trade like this gives them the best chance to win one last championship with him. And if not, it's a great transitional team to their next era. I'm kind of thinking Tim Duncan may take the head coaching spot. Part of me thinks he doesn't want it. Part of me thinks he likes being an assistant coach. But the other part of me thinks that San Antonio, they're going to talk him into being their next head coach, and he's going to be there for another 20 years, just like Popovich has been. And let me slow down. For those of you wondering where the Lakers are in all of these trade talks, honestly, I mentioned Atlanta not settling for less, and I think you would have to if you're going to go the Lakers route. LA has some movable pieces, but I'm kind of turning my nose up at those just a bit because of the fact that the Lakers draft picks are all swaps for the next 3 years with the Pelicans. I'm not loving that. I'm not looking to go with a pick swap. I want those picks to be mine and mine alone, or me directly swapping with the Lakers and being able to swap for the better pick, not being at the mercy of New Orleans. The other thing is, I don't think that the Lakers have the best options for the Hawks. I think these other two teams have better players that are going to allow the Hawks to retool a little bit better and stay competitive. D'Angelo Russell's fun to think about. Rui Hachimura is fun to think about. Jalen Hood-Schifino is interesting. He's very underdeveloped, so he'd be a project at best, and I don't think he's going to be anything too entirely special. So if they can't get a trade done with these other two teams or anybody else, Maybe the Lakers sneak in there, but I'd be surprised if Atlanta doesn't exhaust all of their other routes first. I want to thank all of you for joining me today. I know it's a little bit of a shorter episode today, bit of a time crunch. Excited to start doing our NASCAR paint scheme of the week, and excited to officially start our engines on the upcoming NASCAR season as a whole. Don't forget to leave a comment under this episode for the two-minute drill. You can also send us a DM on Facebook or Instagram. If your comment doesn't get picked, don't worry. Keep them coming, and you're in the running for a future two-minute drill. You can even comment the same comment over and over again on different episodes. It'll eventually get picked. You can find us on Facebook at The Hive with Devin Beasley or on Instagram at The Hive DB. That's at THEHIVEDB. Check us out on the Podbean app or visit our website, thehivedb.podbean.com. I want to give a special shout out to Brittany Stalker for our logo design. You can find her at AshadowsArt on Instagram. That's at AshadowsArt on Instagram. And check out the rest of her past, present, and future projects. And again, to all of our listeners, thank you for joining me today. And you have been listening to The Hive with Devin Beasley, where you get the buzz on all sports all across the nation. We'll see you guys next Thursday.